Anecdotes about books rejected by dozens of publishers before becoming bestsellers. Stories about novels that languished unread for years before scholars and the public finally recognized them. These are the tales that often get told and retold to struggling writers, students, and the readers. While these literary fairy tales may not be completely inaccurate, they conceal how a novel's reception changes over time. Changing responses to a novel can reveal insights into shifting cultural values and norms. Toni Morrison's The Bluest Eye shows how a book can be initially misunderstood and ignored, slowly rediscovered and embraced by a small group, then gain literary recognition and acclaim, become adopted by the education system and taught broadly, and then subject to book bans and censorship, all within the writer's lifetime. You're listening to Remarkable Receptions, a podcast about popular and critical responses to African-American novels. Morrison's first novel, The Bluest Eye, was published in 1970 while she worked as an editor at Random House. The novel tells the story of preteen Pecola Breedlove through the eyes of a peer, Claudia McTeer, who is relating events she still hasn't fully processed years later. When we meet Pecola, she has already been ostracized for her poverty and the darkness of her skin. We later learn that Pecola's father had sexually assaulted and impregnated her. Over the course of the novel, McTeer observes the tensions within Pecola's family, the local Black community, popular culture, and herself as she witnesses Pecola's descent into madness. Pecola, who possesses few social resources and little self-esteem, comes to believe if she only had blue eyes and was seen as beautiful, she would be saved from her fate. The book ends with McTeer reflecting on her responsibility and that of the Black community for Pecola. In terms of theme, Morrison examines images of beauty and colorism, exploring their origins in mass culture and how those values get internalized along racial and gender lines. In terms of artistic innovations, Morrison sought to write a novel from a Black girl's perspective, something that had largely been absent from literature. Morrison wrote The Bluest Eye for African Americans, drawing on the richness of Black language and culture to tell Pecola's story. Upon its publication, the New York Times offered an encouraging and lukewarm review, but one that generally ignores Morrison's artistic strategies or the novel's place within the tradition of African American writing. It frames the novel's theme in the most banal of terms as an exploration of the devastating impact of racism on children. A review in The New Yorker accuses Morrison of unnecessary and unsubtle irony in her decision to rely on the Dick and Jane reader as a frame and oversimplifies the novel's main theme. Despite these reviews in significant places, sales were slow and relatively few people read the book when it came out. Scholars generally ignored it. As Morrison published more books and gained widespread praise, African-American readers and scholars of Black writing returned to the book. Nearly two decades after its publication, scholars and readers began reassessing the novel's aims and its importance. It slowly got elevated into a revered piece of African-American literature, but not yet still adopted by American literary scholars more generally. It had finally developed a small but dedicated Black audience. And then Morrison won the Nobel Prize for Literature in 1993. To promote her work to a wider audience after she won the Nobel Prize, Knopf put out a new edition of the novel with a new afterword by Morrison. The afterword is notable because it signals Morrison's effort to correct misreadings of her novel. She curtly observes that The Bluest Eye was like Pecola's life, dismissed, trivialized, misread. In this new afterword, Morrison clearly comments on the novel's reception and seeks to influence how readers and scholars understand the book. And the marketing effort worked. Morrison's and the novel's reputation soared. In April 2000, Oprah Winfrey selected The Bluest Eye as a book club selection. Although the novel had originally only sold 2,000 copies in the early 1970s, it reportedly sold over 800,000 copies after Winfrey chose it for her show. In addition, Winfrey announced that The Bluest Eye was Morrison's shortest, simplest, and most accessible novel, after her audience balked at the difficulty of Morrison's Paradise. The selection and Oprah's framing of the novel transformed it into the preferred entry point into her Morrison's corpus for black and white readers alike. Morrison's appearances on Oprah once again shifted the public reception of The Bluest Eye. It was now both a literary and a popular success. It had entered a new stage, the mass adoption scale. And by the middle 2000s, school districts began including it in their curricula. Teachers developed lesson plans for the book, and the readership once again expanded as the Common Core reading standards and the College Board's AP test identified The Bluest Eye as an exemplary text for literary analysis for high schoolers. A generation of students now encountered it as required reading. This new level of popularity, however, brought new scrutiny and renewed attention to specific aspects of the novel. The 2007 edition revised the 1993 afterword into a much shorter preface. The major change is that the new preface focuses almost exclusively on the issues related to racial beauty and removes all references to rape and sexual assault. It also tones down Morrison's critique of scholars and readers who she felt misinterpreted the text. These changes signal a shifting response to the novel. Now, issues of microaggressions and question of racial beauty, rather than incest and rape, dominate how it is discussed. This reading of Morrison's novel synthesizes its roots in the Black Arts Movement and more current concerns related to diversity, equity, and inclusion. Social science research about beauty and microaggressions had finally caught up with Morrison's novel, and readers saw this novel as remarkably current in its themes. The 2010s signaled a new set of responses to the novel, censorship. Even with the 2007 preface and its effort to reframe the book's topic around questions of beauty, the frank discussions of rape and sexuality caused some parents to challenge the suitability of the novel in schools and libraries. Throughout the 2010s, The Bluest Eye found itself on the American Library Association's annual top 10 list of most banned books in schools for the year. PEN America also found that the novel has been frequently banned in schools. Most of the books on these lists are recently published, best-selling YA novels, not books or writers who have gained critical and international renown like Morrison and The Bluest Eye. It does speak volumes that Morrison's 50-year-old novel had been grouped together by teachers, students, and would-be book banners with much more recent books. In 2008, Morrison perhaps foresaw The Bluest Eye or her other works might be censored. She gave a speech urging her audience to protect writers from censorship. She knew that censorship was a possible and likely response to any work like The Bluest Eye that dealt with difficult issues related to beauty, race, violence, and sexual assault. When Morrison passed in August 2019, scholars, writers, and editors published scores of tributes to Morrison. These pieces frequently talked about how Morrison's works affected the writers personally. Many observers identified The Bluest Eye as Morrison's book that deeply touched them. The novel had clearly earned a special place in the minds and hearts of its readers, despite an underwhelming initial response. The evolving reception to The Bluest Eye shows how each generation of readers will respond in its own way to a novel. A book that once was ignored and misread is now institutionalized, extolled, and yes, even censored. The Bluest Eye remains a foundational novel for African American literature, and its power only increases despite recent efforts to silence the text, the author, and the readers who love it.
This episode was written by Richard Shore, professor of English at Drury University. He is the author of Parodies of Ownership, Hip Hop Aesthetics, and Intellectual Property Law. And he is the co-editor with LaValerie King of Justice Unveiled, African American Culture and the Law. This episode was edited by Elizabeth Calley and me, Howard Ramsey.
This podcast, Remarkable Receptions, is part of the Black Literature Network, a joint project from African American Literary Studies at Southern Illinois University, Edwardsville, and the History of Black Writing at the University of Kansas. The project was made possible by the generous support of the Mellon Foundation. For more information, visit blacklitnetwork.org.